Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back to Excuse Me, May I Have Some More. I am Brad Kramer. My co-host is Christine Struble. So thematically, much of what I was hoping to talk about in this episode is either directly or indirectly tied into the impending start of spring this weekend. And one of the things that I was really interested in hearing you talk about, you spend an awful lot of time with your privileges and your access at both Disney and Universal in Orlando. And being that you are the grand poobah for FoodSided, which is obviously a food-related site, and then we do a food podcast, most of what you do at the parks, unless you're there with your boys just enjoying yourself, is food-related. So I thought it would be interesting for me, and hopefully for people listening, for you to share some of the new discoveries that you're making from a food standpoint at the assorted parks, something that you've tried recently or places that you've tried recently that you thought were great, or even as people head back into Florida and head back into Orlando to hit the parks, old standbys of yours that are on your favorites list, sort of an insider's guide to eating at Universal and Disney.
Sure, happy to. So one of the big pieces of news that was announced over the weekend at Universal Orlando, they chose to extend their Mardi Gras celebration. So this year it's a little different than in years past, since we have social distancing and capacity at theme parks are a little more limited than years past. So by extending the Mardi Gras celebration to April the 11th, they are giving both people who are coming for spring break, which if you look at the Orlando area, the influx of visitors is great, which is important for tourism because Florida relies on tourism. But specifically at Universal, it gives even people who are locals an opportunity to go back and sample some more of the bites that they're offering at Mardi Gras 2021. There's over 100 different food and beverage options. And you have, this year they called it the Carnival of Flavors. So it's not just the traditional New Orleans favorites, like you get beignets and a crawfish boil or an etouffee or jambalaya. They take you across the globe, and anything from a schnitzel from Germany to some Brazilian items. I will say like the Trinidadian vegetarian, it's like a pea pancake bite, like dough thing with a spicy chutney, is really good. So it's a lot of variety. It is kind of like, going through a global exploration of flavors, and all the booths are spread out throughout Universal Studios. So you get to walk around and enjoy the park and sample everything. And the bites are small enough that you can eat a whole bunch and not, get overwhelmed. And it also entices you to go back another visit because you've probably missed either a great Cuban coffee or the gigantic Bloody Mary that people are talking about because it has so many accoutrements on top of the drink that it turns into a meal. So I think Universal's done a really good job with that for their springtime offering. Right now, Epcot has their Taste of the International Flower and Garden Festival going on. And this year, that event is going on through July 5th, I believe. And it's a little smaller than years past, not necessarily limited in space, because it is throughout World Showcase and some other parts of the theme park. But, you know, the menus are a little different. They're everything spread out, of course, for social distancing. But some of the changes they made this year and some of the new additions are really exciting. Anything from, they have like more of like a brunch option, which for another time we can talk about how to do brunch around Epcot, which is like my favorite thing to do on a Sunday.
Oh, that would be a fun conversation.
But they have the avocado toast, which you want and people enjoy. You know, Mexico has some great offerings. They've brought back something similar that they've offered at both Food and Wine and Festival of the Arts this year, called Festival Favorites, where they have dishes from years past that were people's most popular choices. So like a key lime pie is back, and a few other ones. Two things that I did find really interesting on one of my most recent visits there is they have it's a dessert, but it's not like a super sweet dessert. It's a beet mousse profiterole. Profiterole is basically like a cream puff and it has a crust on top. So it's a little sweet, but then the inside
is the single best vessel in all of dessert eating, by the way.
Well, I mean, and you know, when it's done well, but I mean,
like you could fill it with mashed potatoes and I'd be good to go.
Well, it's not like an underbaked cream puff, because then that's, you know, icky, but a really good one. And they can be small. They don't have to be the gigantic size ones that you get, you know, at the Wisconsin State Fair. And these are like a two biter one. And it's got this mousse that's made with beets and it's a vibrant color. And it comes with candy pecans and a little bit of creme fraiche. And I would, if you get it, I recommend taking the candy pecans and put them inside the profiterole. So you have a little crunch everything. So it makes a really good bite. And then similar to Festival of the Arts, the Moroccan marketplace that they have in the back of World Showcase, recently Disney took over all of the Moroccan restaurants at Epcot. And the offerings that they did, again, for this festival are probably some of the most exciting ones. In addition to a seafood couscous with that is a really big plate of food for what it offers with mussels and shrimp and preserved lemons, really flavorful. They have this dessert, which is a cake, and it's a denser cake because Moroccan cakes tend to be a little heavier, but it has a saffron simple syrup on it. And then it's topped with a fig compote. So if you haven't had that with their glass of sangria, that was one of my favorite bites from Epcot Flower and Garden. I mean, truthfully, there's so many options that it's hard to name all of them, from the poached lobster with the citrus vinaigrette to even this honey spoon bread with bacon on top. And you basically can go to Epcot and, you know, eat your way around the theme park. And right now, theme parks, even the overall capacity is limited, but they are getting more crowded because, you know, people are more comfortable with travel. Everyone does have to wear their masks while you are out and walking around. And any theme park, whether it's Disney or Universal, at their food festivals, their requirements are you can only take your mask off and eat and drink while you are stationary. So that helps people to feel a little more comfortable. It does have a different atmosphere versus what you do, you know, previously, where you walk around with a drink in your hand and a bucket of popcorn and stroll. So you don't have that as much. But, you know, they're trying. I think everyone's trying to get back a little bit of what they remember. And we've spent the past year, you know, trying to recreate some of those things at home. If you look at both Disney and Universal, they released many recipes so people could recreate those authentic dishes that they loved at home. I mean, there you can go and make your own Dole Whip at home. The exact recipe is out there. Granted,
I still remember the Parmesan mashed potatoes. Here, a second reference to mashed potatoes in a few minutes at Chef Mickey's in the Contemporary Hotel. I haven't had those in many, many, many years, but you mentioned the Dole Whip, which is obviously big in Frontierland, but the Parmesan mashed potatoes at Chef Mickey's.
And I always like the coriander chicken wings at the Polynesian. And they sent out at Father's Day last year, Disney sent those out. And you know, Universal will never reveal how to make a real butter beer. That is Chef Steve's creation, and that will stay with that gentleman forever. But there's other dishes that you can find. I mean, if like when Al Roker released his avocado toast recipe when they launched Today Cafe, you can recreate that. It's at home. It might not, because it's coming out of the home kitchen, it might not exactly be the same.
Right.
But a lot of those dishes can and should, be done at home because it offers that slice of your vacation or your memory back again. And that's the whole importance of enjoying food. It's supposed to make you smile. It's supposed to make you feel good. Food is that part that keeps bringing people back. Even just this past week, last week, Frito-Lay announced that they have become the exclusive snack provider for Six Flags. So however that partnership plays out, that's going to drive people to go to that theme park.
Right. And Frito-Lay has Ruffles.
That is correct. And you should own Ridget. Do you own your Ridget?
I'm a traditionalist, and that's the perfect segue. You couldn't have laid that one out even any better if you tried. One of the two interviews we have on this episode, you chatted with rapper T-Pain, and he is now featured in a new commercial for Ruffles and owning his Ridges. And I, before we run that interview, I didn't know what to expect. Cause you hear a rapper and you think, well, they're going to be aloof or not have much to say, or going to stay very on point because it is a product endorsement for Ruffles and their Own Your Ridges campaign. But he was awesome. And the people hear that in a second, but he was engaging. He, for lack of a better word, he has a philosophy about owning your ridges and how that comes into play for him and his approach to music and how he feels people should approach their lives. And I thought it was a really refreshing interview that people enjoyed. Did you enjoy talking to him?
Absolutely. And I think what he brings to the conversation is the aspect that we don't often see. I mean, we see personalities and we go, oh, we know that guy. He's the auto-tune guy. Yeah. I know that. Or maybe I saw him on The Masked Singer, or I can, hit one note from the song that people know. But to get to that point, it takes some business savvy. It takes some knowledge. And more importantly, it takes drive to know who you are and be able to stand out in a sea of sameness, which is kind of the point of what he was getting at. He's a smart businessman. He's a great entertainer, but he's a smart businessman. And I think he could help others kind of develop what their goals could be. It's just, there's something to be said of, don't necessarily just follow the crowd for the sake of following the crowd. Be your unique self and embrace that and own it.
I wonder what Ruffles would be like without Ridges.
It'd be like T-Pain without auto-tune.
Ooh, baby, yeah. How was that? Did we get it?
How's it going?
I'm quite well. How are you?
Pretty good. This is kind of what I do now.
Well, you're a busy guy, but I know with this, the Ruffles promotion, their concept of like owning your own ridges, being your own self, kind of has right. taken on, you know, a really interesting meaning for people. But that seems to be a concept that you've always kind of lived by yourself. So
absolutely.
How did this partnership really kind of exemplify something that you've come to appreciate yourself?
It's kind of just something that I've been living by for a while. You know, at the beginning of my career, I really didn't know how to go about really being myself. I was always modeling myself after people that I thought were cool or people that I thought were really in or, you know, the usual. But as I came to realize, you know, I liked me more than anybody else, I liked the ideas that were coming out of my head and the feelings that were coming out of my heart. I liked that more than I wanted to be cool, you know, and regardless of anybody thought it was their version of cool or, you know, if they thought it was in or whatnot, I kind of didn't care, you know. Obviously, you know, I would, you know, listen to their advice and stuff like that. But, you know, in the end, I just went with my heart. And I didn't realize that I wasn't taking that approach until I started taking that approach. You know, it was kind of a blind leading the blind kind of situation. And, you know, all of a sudden I regained vision and I was able to lead myself to, you know, mounds of success that I have today. And I think that's really what owning your ridges is. It's really about going with you and going with your uniqueness and owning it, you know, and being unapologetic about it.
And today's, I have two teenage sons, and sometimes mm-hmm. they kind of like want to be part of the crowd and kind of meld themselves into, you know, whatever's popular at the moment. So how do you think, what would you tell some of today's youth today to kind of like say, no, stand up for what you appreciate and forge your own path out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that, you know, you have to, that's really something you can't be taught. You have to really feel that. You have to know that what's inside of you is better than what you're following, you know, or it's just not, and it's not always going to be better, but it's going to be unique. It's always going to be different. It's something that'll set you apart. You won't just be a part of the crowd. You'll feel better, and not only about yourself, but your decisions, your livelihood. You know, you won't be just one in a million that may be coming to anything that, you know, if you're coming to a company to pitch an idea, you won't just be trying to pitch the thing that's already been cool for 3 years. You're not, you know, you're pitching something that's only in your head and your heart. So, you know, being a part of the crowd, super fun. Not gonna lie. Hey, look, real fun. Actually, super fun. But if you want to make a difference and you want to, you know, stand out in that crowd and be, you know, the head of that crowd and be the mm-hmm. one that's being actually paid attention to and not just being seen as another part of the crowd, then yeah, you definitely want to go with your uniqueness and your ridges for sure.
And I know the Grammys are coming up this weekend and you're nominated. And if you look at like your arc of music, you've kind of found inspiration in various, you know, whether it's timely or something personal to you. Where do you see music trends mm-hmm. going, especially after this past year where everyone has tried to find some type of creative outlet for expressing themselves?
It's going to be right where it's been. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, this era had bad music and this era was the best era of music. And it's different for everybody because everybody has a different taste. You know, it's about the popularity. It's about who's shoving money into their songs. It's not about every single era has had bad music. Like, it's not, that's no secret. You know, it's about the popularity we put on certain things. So it's not that music has changed or music has taken this vast turn into monotony or whatever. It's not that. It's what we put our attention on. And right now, it's about you know, it's about the viral aspects of a song. It's not really about the sound of it. You know, we're not paying attention to the sound of music. We're paying attention to the viral aspects of it. We're paying attention to how popular someone can make their music. We're paying attention to how much money somebody can throw at the radio and make their songs get played more. We're not paying attention to the actual songs anymore. So it's not that music has changed. It's that our attention span and the things that grab our attention as a whole has changed. So I don't think it's gonna be any different. It's just about the tactics of putting yourself in the forefront. That's the only thing that's gonna change about music.
Well, thinking about that if we're going to be watching the Grammys this weekend, and I know that some promotions with Ruffles will be coming out, you know, through the show. What would you suggest if I'm going to be sitting back and watching it and hopefully having some kind of snack, because it's going to be good entertainment, whether it's, you know, viral or not viral, we're still craving to watch some live music. So what do you think should be in my snack bowl?
My personal favorites are the cheddars for sure. So you want to get something cheesy on there, but as of recent, I found out they've been making flaming hot versions of stuff. So, JT got his new flaming hot barbecue joints. That is going to be, I mean, I had that actually at the commercial shoot. I actually had those. They were pretty good. I was a little jealous. Kind of wanted to be the one to do that, but. I kind of like the spiciness of things. So any flaming hot anything, would just try them all. The jalapeno ones were fire. You got a lot of variety. The Ruffles has really laid it down. When I got to my trailer at the commercial shoot, I had no idea how much variety there was, because there's still international flavors and stuff like that we're just now getting. So it's a vast inventory that they have at Ruffles. So you got a lot of choices, but my personal favorite, flaming hot anything.
When some people really like Ruffles because they're good for dipping, you know, if you put some, like my husband likes to dip his Ruffles, are you a purist where you just eat the Ruffles from the bowl, or do you prefer to have a chip and dip scenario?
I think chip and dip scenario is pretty cool. I think it kind of, you got to start stacking them together and, you know, making different flavors and trying to dip them in other sauces that they're not supposed to go into. I kind of like to experiment. So, you know, especially if it's late night, I'm just sitting in the bed and I got nothing else to do, I'm trying a couple different combinations. So I'm a dipper if it calls for it. If I'm like on a plane or something, and you don't want to start setting up, you know, variety stations on your tray table. But if I got it, if I'm in a hotel room or if I'm at home or anything like that, oh yeah, I'm trying different combinations for sure.
Okay, one last question before I let you go, because it has to do with the Flaming Hot, because it seems like you're a fan too. When your fingers get covered in the Flaming Hot, you know, they kind of tinge your fingers a little reddish colored. Do you have a trick of getting it off your hands so you don't have any issue putting it on, like, your nice yellow jacket?
Hand sanitizer.
Seriously? That works for you?
In and out. It goes away immediately.
That's good to know.
Every time.
I literally
did this last night. you get a napkin and get the excess off, because obviously you did hand sanitizer before that, so you don't want to lick your fingers with hand sanitizer on it. So you wipe off the excess, and then boom, hand sanitizer right after that, it's gone right away.
Just
use hand sanitizer, just all the time. Just even if you're not eating chips, just use hand sanitizer, just all the time.
Maybe that's the new tie-in. You get your Ruffles and you get a bottle of hand sanitizer, and we've got no more red hands.
That's it. We can package it.
There you go. Thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Who knew that hand sanitizer could get the red flaming hot powder off your hands? That one I'm going to remember for a while. It really does work.
Well, and it's funny. I had a bag of nacho cheese Doritos over the weekend with the orange fingers afterwards. And maybe it's because I was not out, or it's a habit after years of living. But unlike T-Pain, I do lick the fingers first. I don't wipe them off with a napkin and then go to the hand sanitizer. And then, you know, maybe because I'm within the confines of my own home. But it was a fun part of the interview with him. You and I had the occasion of chatting with Baker extraordinaire Zach Young recently. And one of the things we talked about was his new Passkaken for Passover. So let's take a listen to that. I loved hearing about your Passkaken for Passover. And not only did I love hearing that you were doing it, but the description of it sounds amazing. And so I was just hoping you would talk about that.
Yeah, well, let's face it, Passover desserts suck. I mean, everything else at the Seder is like magical, you know, like
angel food cake.
That is, yeah, or like the weird raspberry jellies.
Yes.
You know, that have probably never expire. You know, they're like, they're Jewish Twinkies, you know, like post-apocalypse. We're going to find one of those boxes somewhere. So yeah, Passkaken started, it must have been 4 years ago, kind of in that first wave of Piekaken of like, hey, what else can we do? Let's throw some darts at a board. And of course, you know, Passover is the Jewish Thanksgiving, you know, because it is such a food-centric holiday. I mean, let's face it, all of our holidays are food-centric, but I think Passover is especially kind of laden with tradition, but also it is represented in food. So it was a natural. So I wanted to celebrate kind of some of the desserts that people try to make for Passover and put them together Piekaken style. So of course the coconut macaroon pie, need I say more? Although I have a love-hate relationship with macaroons. I feel like a good one is hard to find. You know, the ones that come out of the can aren't great. Super, super dry, and you have to coat them in chocolate. So the coconut macaroon pie, then the flourless chocolate cake, which became like the modern staple. Like I remember the first Seder I went to and there was a flourless chocolate cake and I was like, this is so chic. We have made it. We wandered in the desert for 40 years and we finally got a flourless chocolate cake. And then the raspberry mousse was actually an homage to those raspberry jellies that are not good. And I thought, how can I make this better?
It brings back memories of, as for me as a kid, of going to Sunday school, going to Hebrew school, and then every year in March leading into Passover, going door to door and selling Passover candy.
That was the thing?
Oh yeah. And it was annual. And it was almost like the Jewish version of Girl Scout cookies. Yes. And we would have the form with the photographs of the, and you know, the jellies and the different candies, and go door to door and take the orders. And then 2-3 weeks later, go door to door and make our deliveries. Literally, we were like the little Jewish Girl Scouts.
I never got that. I mean, we only got Girl Scouts and Jehovah's Witnesses coming to the door. And honestly, both of them loved me.
That's fine. There you go. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just, when you mentioned the raspberry jellies, it's just, it brings back such memories for me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's the thing about dessert. That's why I love dessert, because there's such an emotional attachment to it that you don't get from anything else. Maybe your grandmother's meatballs or like my grandmother's matzo balls, right? But other than that, you know, people don't really have an emotional attachment to a steak.
Right. You know? Oh, that's very true. You're selling that through your shop.
Yes.
Is it going to be offered through Gold Belly as well?
Correct.
Like you did with this other, like Christmas and Thanksgiving?
Yes. Everything right now is direct to consumer on Gold Belly.
Oh, good. Okay.
And it's just, it's such a great site. It's such a great format. It's so easy for us to do. And I think for the consumer too, everyone's gotten used to getting everything shipped. And I'm not a online ordering person, you know, for anything. I like to touch, feel, clothes, doesn't matter what it is. Right. You know, I also like the immediate gratification of taking something home with me. But, you know, in the last year, I've really, really embraced the online shopping. And I think people have realized how convenient it is for food and for these specialty foods too, that you can get from all over the country. You know, you can get them anywhere. And in 2 days a day, they're at your door. It's pretty amazing.
We ordered your Piekaken for Thanksgiving. And I mean, it, maybe when you have, you know, Shop Now, there's the gratification of us opening it up and like the big reveal and that first slice into it. It was, you know, it, everyone was like, ooh, ah, you know, that kind of scenario. But why, I'm not Jewish, so I don't have some of the affinity to the past Kagan. I do have a question about what I saw in the Thanksgiving pie Kagan, which was the pecan pie. And I always think of pecan pie, it's either really, really bad because it's like mushy and gross, or it can, you know, you hope that you have a really good one. Yours in that pie Kagan, is there's something special about it? Is it that it's whiskey, or it's like that textural component where you get all of those layers in one like perfect bite?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone always brings up the pecan pie, and for me, it's the pumpkin pie is the star of any show. But I'm from New England, you know. Pecan, I say pecan, not pecan. So pecan pie was kind of a new thing for me. And we really put a lot of work into like, what is a pecan pie? What do people like about it? It's the crust. It's the goo. You know, that's what we call it, the goo. And then the texture of the pecans. So the secret to the, so normal pecan pie filling is light corn syrup, dark corn syrup, eggs, sugar, vanilla, whatever. So the secret to ours, I'm letting it out, is we add molasses, which is dark corn syrup kind of has molasses flavor and vanilla flavor to it. So we decided to make it a little more real. So it's a little bit of molasses and salt, because it the filling is 97% sugar in a pecan pie and some eggs. So it's really about the balance of the salt in there. And that's what kind of takes it to the next level. But it's funny, that's everyone comments on it. And we get a lot of requests just to sell the pecan pie.
Do you sell just the pecan pie? And normally I don't sell pecan pie either. That's like the one thing I was looking at it and I was like, oh, can we have something else? And then once we, you know, I got it and ate it, I'm like, oh, I just want that layer of it because that was so tasty.
I think we'll have to do it this year for the holidays because it's become so requested that you're not alone. It's pretty amazing. I never thought as a nice New England boy that pecan pie would become my thing.
Is there any limit to where you can go with the pie Kagan?
If there is, we haven't reached it yet. You know, I think the thing about pie Kagan is it really started as a joke, you know, as a let's make a dessert turducken. And as we started developing it and thinking of the Thanksgiving classics and how they all work together and how to do it, how to structure it, create it, build it, I actually went back to kind of the classic French entremet, like those mousse cakes, right? Where there's always a sponge layer, a pastry cream layer, a fruit layer, a sub layer, like a cookie layer. And when I started thinking about pies and cakes, you realize you kind of have all those things too. Pie crust, the custard-like pecan filling layer, the cake clearly. So while as like over the top and fun and American as these cakes are, they somehow relate back to my classic French training in a weird way. This is what goes on in my head. I come from a bakery background, but also spent most of my time in restaurants. So in plated desserts, you have 8 or 9 components. You're able to balance hot, cold, creamy, crunchy, all these textures, all these different flavors. When you think of a regular cake, it's cake and frosting. Right. And nothing wrong with that, but it gets boring. So to be able to put all of these elements into one slice and keep it interesting, I mean, I think that's kind of the magic of pie cake. I love doing them for holidays for a lot of reasons, mainly for the inspiration. You know, I think the way my brain works is the possibilities are so endless that for me to have some kind of constriction, some kind of confines or inspiration is really helpful. So whether it's Passover or Mother's Day, working on like the spring flavors, that is what kind of drives me.
Is the Mother's Day pie cake in a formed idea in your head yet, or is it still?
Oh yes. We're bringing back the Mother's Day pie cake, and just like we did it last year,
okay,
which was actually version 2.0. We did a Mother's Day pie cake in 3 years ago, and I wasn't really happy with it. So version 2.0, which is back for this year, I love it. It's the lemon cake, strawberry swirl cheesecake, and then a strawberry rhubarb pie on top. And because it's springy, summery, you think of the fruit pies, we actually do the top crust on the pie on top of the cake, which is something that we hadn't done before. So it's like this crown jewel of a pie sitting on top of the cake.
It makes me curious. You are at heart, obviously, an artist. Yes, you're a baker. Yes, you're a chef and all that. But you're creating art, especially in the form of a pie cake. How do you make the decision? I'm fascinated by this. How do you make the decision to do the same Mother's Day cake, pie cake in, or the same Thanksgiving that you know rocked and everybody loved and there's huge demand for, versus putting on your mad scientist hat and your artist hat and going back to the drawing board and tweaking it, updating it, or changing it completely? Like, do you really, really struggle with making that decision, or do you just say, nope, that's it? It was great last year. We're going to go with the same thing this year.
I think there are so many elements that go into one of these, you know, whether it's, you know, three pies, four pies, the different fillings, the cheesecakes, et cetera, that there's so much work that we do on each element because we really do make them separately. They really do stand alone. So when we hit the nail on the head, why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Both your desserts and even like the new offering that you're doing, there is a very important visual component to each of them. Could you give a little background of why now so many people are kind of drawn to that's either the super pretty cake or the brightly colored dessert, all of those things that are turning, you know, it's not just a plain piece of cake anymore. It has to be showy in a way to make everyone say, oh, this is special. It can turn any day. It doesn't have to be a holiday into like a special celebration.
Yeah. I mean, I blame Lisa Frank and Instagram for that.
Unicorns.
Yes. Yeah. I actually do think that social media plays a huge part of our kind of the way we're eating dessert now. You know, everyone wants to take a picture of it before they eat it. The brightly colored things, the goopy, the porny things work really well. And it's hard to work in that world, you know, because you have people saying to you, make a viral dessert or like make a viral meme. It's like, no, you can't engineer that, right? And I'm not going to put sprinkles on something just to put sprinkles on something. You know, there has to be a reason for it and an intent to it. And I look at, going back to the regular pie cake, and it's not sprinkly, it's not blingy, it's actually like naturally colored, right? But you have this like autumnal celebration that happens in there with the shades of browns and oranges, the green from the apple, those yellows, like all of those colors work. And it ends up being very compelling. But I do think that this whole brightly colored sprinkle swirly situation, I mean, hey, we eat with our eyes first. Dessert is a celebration. You can't put sprinkles on a steak.
I saw like on social media, you're showing a preview of the new cake that, and forgive me, I'm not going to get the name correct, but it looks as if it has like a, one of those glazes off the side with kind of like has that big reveal moment before you cut into it.
Yeah. The spill your heart out cake, as we called it. We launched it for Valentine's Day. It's done so well that we're trying to keep it year round too. I wanted to do an interactive cake that wasn't like a cake kit where you really have to do the work, but you can have fun, play with your food and kind of get this experience. And for Valentine's Day, it made sense because, you know, couples, you can't really go out to like a crazy fancy dinner, but you can do something fun at home. So we made this cake that, you know, we ship you the cake. It's layers of chocolate cake, chocolate mousse covered in strawberry cheesecake frosting. And then we give you a bottle of rosé champagne glaze and a bottle of sprinkle mix that you pour into a ring on top, remove the ring and everything kind of dribbles and floods down. It ends up looking totally different every time someone does it. But it's kind of this cool interactive, like, hey, I did this. And it was born, you know, born out of kind of all of those brightly colored mirror glazed cakes that Everyone Loves to Shoot. And then some of these like tsunami Disney princess cakes too, where there's like an element of movement, but it's just kind of taking dessert into the, to another dimension almost, where there's action to it.
But, and it almost feels like for those of us who can't really bake well, that we can have that little bit of Food Network moment, like on the baking championships. Do you think that those type of shows that you have been very successful with kind of influence what people want to eat when they're going to have like that super special dessert?
Totally. I mean, people have seen this either on Instagram, on Food Network, but maybe not actually eaten it. Right. So it's a way. And again, with like the nationwide shipping, like you can get it at home. Yeah. I mean, media has changed the way we consume, literally consume. So to be able to get something like that at home, and to also have like it's shake and bake, or it's shake and cake and I helped, you know, it's like all of the glory, none of the work.
When you judge on different baking championships and Halloween and so on and so forth, you're dealing with professionals or skilled, talented people. Can you tell me what it was like in your head if we had a thought bubble above your head working with people on Worst Cooks?
I love it. I think it takes a lot of bravery to, one, admit what you don't know, to try something new. I think the kitchen is intimidating, much like myself, clearly, all child size large of me. So, I mean, I give everyone a great deal of credit for just trying it, for doing it, and to be able to laugh at yourself. You know, it's like everyone's in on the joke, and you really do want to be better. They really do want to learn and be better. But at the end of the day, if you're cooking at home, like what's the worst that can happen? Try something new, you know? You burn it, okay, cool, throw it out. Like it's not like you're trying to build a house where like the roof falls down, right? It's a cake, it collapses. Guess what? It's probably still gonna be edible. Like scoop it into a glass, call it a trifle. So yeah, I mean, I find it wildly entertaining, but it's always, I'm also highly self-deprecating. So I think anyone who can laugh at themselves has the edge.
Yeah, that's a good point. Christine, anything else?
No, I'll leave it at that. I'm going to also tag the thing, scoop it into a glass and call it a trifle for my next baking disaster. So thank you on that one.
Correct. There is always one thing I've learned from the baking competition shows is you can basically talk your way out of any situation.
And in technical terms, we call that repurposing.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Zach, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Great to chat with you guys.
Since we're on the topic of spring, Easter and Passover are spring holidays. I'm wondering whether you have a dessert or food tradition for Easter that is the same thing you do each and every year, or whether you change it up based on what you're feeling leading up to that holiday in that given year.
Usually we change it up. It would be different, say, if we were going to spend the holiday with family, because if that's the case, like my father-in-law always has to have ham at Easter. And then there's a dish, it's pineapple casserole.
Didn't we ban the word ham from this podcast in episode right. one?
I did. Well, you don't like ham. I'm sorry, but you know, he's older than you. So oldest person rules when it comes to food choices, because that's okay. Just how it goes. So he likes ham, and his wife it loves pineapple casserole, which I never had until I was married. Also, you know, kind of like traditional dishes. When it's just my husband and my two boys, we go a totally different route. We've done, I think last year we did lamb on the big green egg. So more of like a smoked lamb shank.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what's your Easter dessert of choice, or does that also change?
That kind of changes. It just depends on what we try to match, whatever food we're doing with the, you know, whatever the main protein at the dinner is with the dessert. So like, for example, at Thanksgiving, we serve turducken. So that means our dessert should also be a dessert in a dessert. So we serve pikakken, which is, you know, Zach's invention.
Right.
So, you know, it normally there's a theme involved. I haven't quite thought about Easter this year, so might have to start planning on that. I don't know.
So that should wrap things up for us. We have, you know, one of the things about doing a food related podcast, or what we call a foodcast, is sitting and talking for 40, 45 minutes about food. In this case, the different dishes that you discussed from Universal and Disney, and then talking snack chips with T-Pain onto dessert with Zach Young. We end with these episodes and the inclination is, I got to walk into the kitchen and find something to snack on. And that's not good when you're doing podcasting about food, because it only adds to what already has been excessive eating during the pandemic to begin with.
Well, maybe you should sign up for Peloton and we could go do a class together.
Record the podcast while we're cycling?
Well, it could be, Peloton has cycling, running, walking, meditation. I don't foresee you doing boot camp, but, you know, we could do some co-meditation on food.
That's a good way to keep an audience. Christine, thank you.
Brad, it is always a pleasure.
It's fun. And hopefully it's fun for the people listening too. So if you enjoyed this episode and you enjoyed what could best be described as our eclectic roster of guests this week, a world-class rapper and a baker extraordinaire and a food personality, it's just scratching the surface of what we have coming up in future episodes. So please post a review, like us, subscribe to us on your platform of choice, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else that you enjoy your podcasts, and keep coming back to join us, because we do appreciate it. Christine, we will talk again soon.
Bye, Brad.
Take care. Bye-bye.
May I have some more?
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.